On today's College Football Inquirer, we preview the Cotton Bowl, Ohio State and Miami, and the Sugar Bowl, Georgia Ole Miss, a rematch of one of the most exciting games of the season, but no Lane Kiffin this time. Also, tons of coaching news. We're into the coordinator portion of the cycle, but there's a former head coach who is coming back to the conference that he just worked in. Chip Kelly back in the Big Ten as an offensive coordinator for the second time. We'll talk about that and more on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I'm Andy Staples. Ross and I are headed to our various media days today. I am going to the Orange Bowl media day, hence the tiki hut that I am under. Ross is headed to Sugar Bowl media day. And let me guess, Ross, Marriott by the Convention Center, right?
Sheridan Canal.
Oh,
but it is a Marriott property now.
Oh, yeah. I have stayed at that Sheridan. That Sheridan, yeah, so big time. That was the Chiefs Hotel.
It
last
is.
Year.
It's nice. It's nice. Yeah, it's nice. I'm looking out my window at the bend of the Mississippi River from the 46th floor. So,
It's a that's cool, where last cool time I was there, it was here. Sunbelt Media Days, to give you an idea of what I travel for.
Well, we're going to talk about the game Ross is at length, because that is highly interesting because of the lack of Lane Kiffin. This game was played in Athens. It was a shootout the first time. Hardly anybody punted. Ole Miss did twice in the fourth quarter, I believe. But first, we got to talk about this Cotton Bowl, Ohio State and Miami. And it's one of those, like, obviously no players on the field remember Ohio State and Miami meeting for the national title in the Fiesta Bowl after the 2002 season. But as an old person, maybe this is a sign that I am an old person now, because when I saw the two helmets next to each other, it just gave me a shock of nostalgia for that game.
The helmet game, Godfrey, as you call them, right? The helmet game.
Yes. Like quintessential, right? Even though Miami was not a historic power until the 80s, it's absolutely a helmet game. I remember where I was, not yet a journalist, not that old, but I remember where I was when this happened. I remember when it happened. I can also assure you that a smattering of Buckeyes in my personal life have told me that on the off chance they meet a Miami fan anywhere in the world, this is still a point of discussion. So over under on times mentioned in the broadcast, I will say I'm going to give it 4 built in mentions on the play by play.
The name Glenn Sharp is going to come up quite a bit.
That was the pass interference, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That's what I thought. I know Miami played during that stretch for a couple of national championships, and so I couldn't remember if it was that one that was the pass interference. But yeah, I do remember as a high schooler at the time watching that game. This is a fun one. Ohio State was my pick to repeat again, but I'm having some worrisome thoughts over that, given the talent that Miami has and what I saw, how I saw their defense play against Texas A&M. I'm having a little concern despite the talent that Ohio State had. I mean, this on the field, it's got to be, of the quarterfinals, it's got to be the most, right, talented matchup. This is your, Andy, this is your people's world, Ari and the guys at OM3 and the recruiting.
Yep. Stars
the
matter,
five
baby.
Five-star talent on the field there is probably insane.
It is, and I think that's what's interesting about this, because when you look at the top-end talent that Miami has, the 10-point spread feels a little big. Because, yes, yeah. Ohio State's been great all year. Ohio State's defense has been dominant all year. But if we just go, you know, potential first-round talent for potential first-round talent, Ohio State still has the most of anybody in the bracket. But Miami may have the second most. Maybe Georgia. But, you know, when you talk about Reuben Bain, Francis Malinoa, I mean, these guys are absolute first-round talents. Malachi Toney can grow into that, and Bryce Fitzgerald can grow into that. They're only freshmen. That's the thing I'm so excited about, is the level of talent on the field, which harkens back to that Fiesta Bowl when nobody gave Ohio State a chance in that game because it was the Miami team coming off a national championship. They had so many pros on that team. Yeah. But then when you go back and look at who played for Ohio State that day, they had a ton of pros on that team. That team was absolutely loaded. And I think this is one thing, if this winds up being a close game, I bet we look back in 4 or 5 years and some of the young guys on Miami wind up being big time, you know, NFL draft pick type guys. And I think that's kind of the difference. And so we talked about it on my On Three show on Monday, and because my co-host Ari Wasserman is obsessed with the idea that Jeremiah Smith, his recruitment came down to Ohio State and Miami, and he was very close to picking Miami. He actually had Miami closed in his backpack on the day he announced. And if Jeremiah had picked Miami, then I think this spread would be completely different. I think it would be close to a pick 'em. But Jeremiah said the reason he didn't pick Miami is they didn't go play in games like this. So now they do, and you wonder, okay, if they could possibly pull the upset here in advance, does that mean the next Jeremiah Smith growing up in South Florida doesn't leave?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think this is, in terms of narrative function, far more important for Miami in terms of the next 3 to 5 years, because this would be the return that we have talked about or heard about from Miami and Mario Cristobal for years, or their boosters for 10 years, 15 years, but prior to that, even without winning the national title this year or even appearing in the game, I think this one game is sort of a micro referendum. What's interesting to me about this is that Malachi Toney was the difference against Texas A&M, right? When you have outstanding talent in important positions, that's usually the difference. When everything else is kind of nullified like it was in that A&M game, then you're going to have an outstanding player make an outstanding play. That's what we talk about in college football. Everybody's got shooters on both sides of this. So I'm going to be really curious. You can't just rely on an outstanding player to go and kind of pull you out of the fire the way they did against A&M, because in certain situations the last couple of years, that's how Ohio State has operated as well. The more consistent team here is going to win, and I have absolutely no idea who that is, mainly because of the lack of tests on Ohio State's side, and then just because of the general inconsistency of Miami.
And we've talked about this before, but like, we saw nobody that had a bye last year win a quarterfinal. And this matchup strikes me as sort of like, in a way, the opposite matchup of what we saw last year, where Ohio State was sort of in Miami's place. They won a big, right, first round game, and then came in and played Oregon that had been sitting for 3 weeks or so. And it kind of reminds me of sort of that situation. And I just wonder if Miami has picked up a lot of steam winning on the road against the SEC and, you know, and Texas A&M, and then just kind of continuing to steamroll. I don't know what the key matchup is here, but for me, especially after watching Miami's defense against Texas A&M, I do wonder if Miami's front can just get to Julian Sain and put pressure on him enough to where he can't throw the ball to maybe two of the best receivers in the country. That to me is something I'm guessing that's going to shape the game.
Yeah, different game for Miami's front, because last week they had to corral Marcel Reed. They had to make sure Marcel Reed stayed in the pocket and didn't slip out and kill them there. This time they're not necessarily worried about Julian Sain doing that, but you got to get him on the ground because he's very accurate. If he gets the ball out, it's in Jeremiah Smith's hands or it's in Carnell Tate's hands, and you have a major, major problem. Now, I will say Miami's open field tackling was excellent, but it's one thing when you're doing it to some, you know, there were good receivers at Texas A&M, but getting Jeremiah Smith on the ground by yourself is a totally different challenge than getting Casey Concepcion or Mario Craver on the ground by yourself. The other thing that I think Miami has to do, and I think this will decide the game, they're going to have to take some risks down the field with Carson Beck. They were extremely risk-averse offensively against Texas A&M because they knew if he didn't throw any interceptions, they were in the game. Their defense would keep them in the game. They're going to have to score some because Ohio State's going to score some. They will have to throw the ball down the field, and you risk a Carson Beck game on that front. But they do have talented enough receivers. You know, they've got Malachi Toney, we mentioned him, Keelan Marion, CJ Daniels. They have talented enough receivers to beat some good defensive players, and Ohio State has maybe the best ones down the field. So you have to kind of open it up if you're Shannon Dawson, the offensive coordinator, and let Carson Beck try to throw it down the field. And that is going to be a fingers crossed, gnash teeth moment pretty much every time.
Experience tells us that we should favor the older and wiser quarterback here. But Carson Beck's an interesting case because he hasn't been to the postseason with his team or this offense. He hasn't been to the postseason with Georgia, right? He was out last year when they played in the Sugar Bowl and lost to...
He played in the Orange Bowl, I guess, against the, you know, zombie Florida State team. But that's right. Florida State
game. So that's, Andy, that's what I'm trying to figure out. What is the last truly big-time game? Because he was injured in the SEC Championship against Texas, right? Mm-hmm. And before that, it was probably, what, the loss to Ole Miss or maybe the Georgia Tech game last year?
The loss to Ole Miss, yeah, at Texas where they won in the regular season last year.
It's been a while since we've had Carson Beck alert status because it's been a while since Carson Beck has been in a high-platform game, whereas then you have the less proven commodity on the other side who has been more consistent in a smaller body of work. I kind of like my hair brethren here saying to have that first like A-list marquee like moment game. He hasn't really had that yet. He hasn't had a chance
He is so good at threading the needle, throwing into tight windows. And look, the defenses he's played other than Indiana's probably haven't been able to do much with that. So this will be a more talented defense than just from a top end standpoint than anything they've seen. I think Indiana's a more consistent defense, but they only scored 10 points against Indiana. They only scored 14 points against Texas. The Texas defense is the most similar to this. So he has seen something like that. You know, Texas has Colin Simmons, who's going to be a first-round draft pick. Texas has talent all over the defense, and that was his first start, and he ends up winning the game. So I do think Julian Sain has seen this, even though he hasn't seen much of it.
Andy, the funny thing about mentioning Texas is I feel like the entire game plan, it was almost somewhat acknowledged, was we're going to let our defense win the game. We have a really young quarterback here. We're going to kind of play a really like type of small ball offense. And it almost has to be like, as you said at the top, the opposite here. So the Texas game is instructive in terms of talent and defense, but they can't go in there with that. If they come in hyper conservative here, I don't think they can win the game.
Yeah. Not to transition to our next one, but a segue. Man, the people at Georgia, they're not really big fans of a one Carson Beck. I'm sure they'll be rooting against. They'll be rooting against the Hurricanes like they have. It seems all season. They are not fans here in New Orleans. The Georgia guys.
Imagine the storylines if Miami and Georgia get through this thing and they're playing in a semifinal. I mean, you've already got the Jeremiah Smith and Miami storyline. You'll have the Caleb Downs, by the way, because remember Caleb Downs leaves Alabama and then his choice comes down to Ohio State or Georgia. He's from the Atlanta area. So that was, you're going to get a lot of this, but the Carson Beck thing will dominate it. It will absolutely dominate it if Miami gets through. But yeah, we'll have to see what happens. I do think how aggressive do the offenses want to be? The defenses are the stronger group in both of those teams. So let us move to the Sugar Bowl, Ross, where they have played this game before, and both defenses were booty cheeks except for the early part of the fourth quarter for Georgia's defense.
Yeah, it was. I was at that game, and it was. I don't know that I've ever been at a game that where each team scored on every single possession until early in the fourth quarter. So three, I mean, it was. It was pretty wild. It was like watching, sort of kind of reminded me of just like watching a tennis match, right? Go back and forth and you're waiting for somebody to break the serve. And Georgia finally did that with about 10 or 11 minutes maybe to go in the game. I'm trying to remember Ole Miss punted late
straight
in the third
three
quarter.
Ole Miss in the fourth punted. Quarter. Yeah.
Yeah, in the fourth quarter. Yeah. And then Georgia scored. Of course, Georgia scored on both. Georgia scored in every possession in the game. It was remarkable. I think Georgia kicked a couple field goals early in the game, and that's why they were down, I want to say. But Ole Miss scored a touchdown on their first, like, six possessions. I mean, it was crazy, first five possessions.
Yeah.
So
Ole Miss was up
this
10
is gonna be
going into the fourth quarter.
They can, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like, and they had control of the game, it felt like, because they had stopped Georgia enough to force field goals, and so it felt like they were sort of in control of the game, and then so quickly. As soon as Georgia got that stop in the fourth quarter, they ran down the field and then they stopped them the next possession as well. You just felt the momentum too in that stadium just completely changed during that. And afterward, Lane Kiffin, I remember him talking about, who, of course, absent Lane Kiffin here, maybe absent Lane Kiffin. He certainly won't be coaching in the game. The question is here, actually, people are asking, will Lane make the hour drive or the 15-minute helicopter flight from Baton Rouge to New Orleans?
That's a bad idea.
I heard he's been advised by people, do not come to the game. But when has Lane listened to anybody? So
that's a really bad idea.
Who knows?
And Lane's
just going on Game Time and buying a ticket. He's going to buy a front row ticket and just
A lot of security needed.
Yeah, I don't know if Lane will be in the crowd, Andy, unless Lane's bringing a Secret Service level of fortification with him.
If he's
going to
be here, he'll be in a suite, tucked away in a suite somewhere.
The what's interesting to me is that we haven't yet, like, we all saw the Tulane win for Ole Miss in the playoff. Everybody got comfortable with Pete Golding. A lot of things didn't happen in that game, like situational football, right? There was no chess match really involved. They were up 14-0 before you could blink in that game. Things felt automatic. There weren't a lot of confabs. They talked about this after the game. Because things were so one-sided, there wasn't a lot of executive decision-making. There was a little bit for Pete Golding as head coach. But if you think about the pace and flow of the way that first Georgia game went, that's very much a Lane Kiffin signature game, win or lose. I'm predicting a Georgia win because I predicted Georgia to win the national championship here. I just don't know if it's going to go quite like that this time. One, the defenses have had time to adjust to what they saw in the first game, right? The second matchup's always different, but this is just going to be a different decision-making Ole Miss team, I think, than some of the moments that you saw and the pure aggression that they employed, especially in the third and fourth quarter of that first game against Georgia. I don't think Golding's going to do that.
Yeah, and I'm writing a little bit about this today for Media Day, is that you don't have Lane Kiffin, right? But you have six of his assistants that have already signed deals to coach at a school in this state, in Ole Miss's chief rival, which is one of the more unusual and just bizarre things ever. And there's a lot of discussion here from the Ole Miss people I've already heard in the day and a half here about just how that will pan out, right? Like how this is working when you have half of the coaching staff that's on the way out and they are controlling sort of the offensive game plan. Just a lot of questions, right? And just a whole unusual situation that Ole Miss finds itself in. But you do wonder, Godfrey, how that will impact, or will it impact the team in these executive decisions that you referred to?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this before with Michigan, right? We've seen what kind of chopping the head off does, although it's going to be a very, very different type of experience. One, because of the style of play, and two, because of the situation. It's not like Lane Kiffin's, you know, parked back at his house or the team hotel, you know, still talking to these assistant coaches. He apparently is talking. If you watch the Texas Bowl broadcast, he's in constant contact with the guys that he's bringing to LSU, but he's not keeping a dialogue with Pete Golding or giving advice on how to prepare for Georgia. I'm genuinely curious what he thinks. And I haven't been genuinely curious what Lane Kiffin thinks about anything in a while, because we've suffered such fatigue. But what kind of product does he want to see Ole Miss put out on the field? I'm sure he would love to have his assistants down there and get ready, but I just would assume that his ego would love his sort of headless Ole Miss team to continue this far into the bracket. I don't know if he's going to be cheering for him, though.
Well, it's interesting because you question what the ego wants. Does the ego want the team he put together to win the thing, or does the ego want they can't do it without him? I hope it's the first.
Exactly.
I really do. And it's interesting.
And something else, Andy, to keep in mind, is the portal opens Friday. And I would imagine, as we often see, a former coach, you know, wants to go look back and potentially take some players from his former team.
Yeah.
And so that's going on too. That's been going on too. Which, let's just say, the Ole Miss people are none too happy about that situation. And again, you're talking about five assistants still coaching a team that them and potentially their former coach are trying to poach and take with them eventually.
Coincidentally, we got to talk about Kiwon Lacy, because Kiwon Lacy, the Ole Miss running back, we have an availability report. He was listed as probable. Remember, he bruised his shoulder in the Tulane game. So that's a big one. He needs to be able to play and be able to play at maximum capacity for Ole Miss to win this game. Because look, Georgia has been, basically since the fourth quarter of that Ole Miss game, they've been firing on pretty much all cylinders. You know, the offense kind of bogged down in the Georgia Tech game when Drew Bobo, the center, went out. But once they had their second center, Malachi, I'm blanking on his last name, but he had a full week of practice and all of a sudden he was fine. So I think this is interesting. And the executive decision-making, Godfrey, that you brought up fascinates me, because I'll take you back. Because Kirby Smart, the other coach in this game, we view as one of the best coaches in the sport universally, as a great on-field coach, a great recruiting coach, a great motivator, great everything. He was not a great on-field coach always. Mm,
no.
He had to grow into that. Let's not forget like the fake punt in the SEC championship game in 2018. Some decisions that were made in the national title game the year before that they lost in overtime, you know, where they were dominating through the first half. And obviously Tua comes in and that changed the math on everything. But Kirby grew into a great on-field coach. Like, I'll never forget the timeout against Ohio State in the Peach Bowl when they're about to run the fake punt. Like, he has gotten so much better as an on-field coach. And the reason I bring this up is because Pete Golding has one game of head coaching experience under his belt.
Right.
And as Godfrey pointed out, did not have to make a lot of high-leverage decisions. So that's an advantage for Georgia. And it is nothing against Pete Golding. Kirby Smart, who we view as one of the greatest ever, struggled with this at first and then grew into it.
Wait, Pete was literally his replacement, right? Or am I missing a DC?
Wouldn't Tosh LaPoy?
Yeah, okay,
no, Jeremy,
that's right.
Jeremy Pruitt, until he got the Tennessee job, then LaPoy, then Golding.
Okay. Not the direct replacement, but he had, for a time, the Alabama DC job was the catbird seat to become a head coach. And then Pete's path was a little bit different. And I think he incurred the wrath of a changing game, and more points were scored against Alabama, and he wasn't considered to be as coveted as Kirby. But they have a ton of similarities. It's just that, man, look, if we set this premise up, we've barely kind of talked about the football of this game because it's sort of impossible to. If you set this premise up, if you were writing a fictional television show about college football, this would never make it out of the writer's room. Okay.
No.
Until 30 days ago, this would have been considered absolutely, stupid, honestly. Like this is improbable. So, and yet you have this situation where, you know, there's just something almost, there's no way for us to project or prognosticate what's going to happen when all of your offensive staff, and look, let's make no mistake, this is an offensive football team. Ole Miss has had some defensive moments. This was built for Lane Kiffin by Lane Kiffin, okay? Your entire offensive staff, the second they're done with practice for the last, 20-odd days, they're getting on the phone to do LSU staff meetings and to, you know, recruit players. And, like, we've never seen anything like this. And what kind of scares me a little bit, if there's a wonky result in this game or if it's just a Georgia blowout, this is catnip for conspiracy theorists.
Hmm, right. Yes. And remember, last Monday, Lane called the staff, that offensive staff, back for I think like a day or two to go back to Baton Rouge. Ole Miss practice, they had like a walkthrough. The staff missed it. They missed all meetings that day. It's just a really weird spot. And I think it would shock a lot of people if Ole Miss won this game, even Ole Miss people, because of everything that's happened.
Absolutely. Yeah. I haven't talked to a single person around Oxford who is confident about this game.
Think about which unit of the four offenses and defenses in this game. Which unit has been the best since the last time they played? It has been the Georgia defense. The Georgia defense goes into, because remember, they go to Starkville and Mississippi State had taken Tennessee to overtime. They'd taken Texas to overtime. They shut the Bulldogs down.
And scored a lot
of
points.
They went 35. Yeah. They went 35-10 against Texas. The Georgia Tech game, the defense had to save them because the offense was not playing well. And then -3 rushing yards allowed against Alabama in the SEC championship. This defense is playing as well as it can. And Glenn Schumann, by the way, who normally would have gotten a head coaching job in this kind of cycle, didn't. And his full focus has been on shutting down this offense, because he probably was working on Ole Miss offense when the bracket came out.
Hey, points per drive? Georgia's terrifying. This is why I picked them to win the national championship. Andy, you talk about that Mississippi State game. That was weak compared to what they put together after that. Mississippi State broke 21, and no one else has done it since. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they played Charlotte in there, but points allowed 10-3, 9-7 since that Mississippi State game. This is not great for Ole Miss.
And Georgia's offense is hitting at the right time, too. Like I said, the Georgia Tech game is an aberration because the center went down. And I know I'm Mr. O-line guy, but there are only two players who touch the ball on every play. One's a quarterback, one's a center. You lose your center, weird things can happen. They fixed that very quickly. Drew Bobo is still out, by the way. But they have been so good on offense. Gunnar Stockton has been awesome since that Texas game.
The Texas game alone on offense, I mean, Ole Miss's defense has been opportune at times this season. But, I mean, if you need a fifth or sixth reason to pick the Bulldogs in this game, it is that body of work that they put out against Texas, because they saw a talented, albeit flawed defense in Texas, Andy, with NFL talent, and they were able to get creative in a way that we haven't seen as I scan back through the schedule, it's probably the most creative I've seen the Georgia offense this season, with the exception of maybe some forced big plays against Tennessee, you know, where they kind of had to get the ball downfield to keep serve. This is as complete a team coming out of the SEC as you could ask for at this point in the season.
And fourth down decision making by Kirby Smart, play calling by Mike Bobo in that Texas game was on point. It was different than what we've seen from that duo in the past. They seem like they understand, as good as their defense has been playing, this era of college football is not designed for defensive dominance. So you've got to take some of those chances. And you know, I thought Bobo really called a great game against Texas. And I saw Kirby, you know, to Chris Lowe, my coworker at On3, Kirby, you know, did the whole, hey, look, guys, I know you don't like Mike Bobo. Get over it. I love Mike Bobo. And he's been awesome.
He's taken a lot of flack, hasn't he?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's it's actually on the back of the driver's license in Georgia is run the ball Bobo. So, I mean, this is, you know, Kirby can get over that, too. This is he knew what he was doing when he brought Mike back into the program. I mean, I'm not defending the idiot in the stand, but I kind of am. Mike also earned that reputation over the course of many, many seasons in Georgia. So,
listen, you throw the ball four times against South Carolina inside the 5-yard line, and all of a sudden, you know, you build 1,000 bridges and never mind. Okay, gentlemen.
Yeah.
These games are going to be so much fun. Ross, you're headed to Sugar Bowl Media Day, so you'll be talking to the Rebels and Bulldogs today. We do have to talk about some teams outside the playoff that are making some very interesting hires, and we will do that when we return on the College Football Enquirer. We're back at the College Football Enquirer, and just to remind you, if you want to see the beautiful bookshelf behind Stephen Godfrey, the hotel room behind Ross Dellinger, or the tiki hut that I am standing under, go to the home screen on your smart TV, find that Yahoo Sports Network icon, click on it. You can watch all of the shows from the Yahoo Sports Network. Godfrey's on Yahoo Sports Daily all the time. You can catch him. Also, if you want to see us day or night, any device, anytime, go to yahoosports.tv on your phone, on your tablet, on your laptop. We will be there for you. Click the College Football Enquirer, and you can watch us in all our glory. Gentlemen, some news breaking. So we are behind, you know, peel back the curtain. We're recording this pretty early on Tuesday morning. But because Chip Kelly doesn't sleep, Chip Kelly and Northwestern got a deal done. I want to say it was like 4:55 a.m. Central Time for Chip Kelly to be Northwestern's new offensive coordinator. I welcome back to college football, Chip Kelly. You got a lot of money from the Raiders for about 8 weeks of work, and now you're back.
I got a question. Back. Don't you think the Northwestern job would have been available at like 9:15 over brunch? I mean, like, I'm pretty sure. Hey, as we say in the South, that would have kept that'd keep you didn't have to do that at 4 a.m. like a weirdo.
No, or like last night, very odd. But you know, whatever. How's that Pop Tart, Godfrey? What was that? Strawberry?
It's pretty good. It's frosted cherry.
Frosted cherry. All right. Very jealous.
That's a tease for those who don't know.
That's a teaser. This is also audio that our producer's going to have to edit out because I'm chewing.
Back to Chip.
It's ASMR.
So we obviously saw Chip, in the league at Ohio State, do pretty well. Helped the Buckeyes go on that magical playoff run and win the national championship, and then lasted how many games in the NFL? 8? 10? I don't know. 12?
It was more than 8, but it was not a lot.
Yeah.
Was it the Urban Meyer over or the Urban Meyer under?
I believe it was over Urban Meyer, but not by much. But he got a lot of money because he was the highest paid offensive coordinator in the league at the time, and I believe they had to just pay his whole deal out.
So he really doesn't need to work, but he's chosen to work at Northwestern in the Big Ten, which is interesting. But, you know, David, you know, Chip's name was sort of like circulated around for a few jobs, including, by the way, like if Biff, you know, had gotten a Michigan job or something, his name was sort of circulated out there as being a possible OC at Michigan. I think that was part of Biff's sort of plan, a proposal, Biff Pogge, that he made to the Michigan administration that obviously they didn't accept. But his name has been sort of out there, and it was pretty obvious that he wanted to get back in. And so for Brabet Braun and them, like if you're a Northwestern fan, I'm guessing you're pretty pumped about this. And it seems like a really big hire, and you do wonder if Chip eventually, if he has enough success and things stabilize more ever in college sports, will he ever want to be a head coach again too? Is that sort of in his future at all, since he's sort of getting back in it when he really doesn't have to? Because as Andy said, he has plenty of money and he's done plenty of things in college football and in beyond.
I would counter that Chip does need to work, because I think Chip is a little bit like a shark and he's deathly afraid of not swimming. I was looking through his CV. I don't know. Well, there's a great Raiders joke in here if you want to make it. I don't know the last time he would have this lacking amount of talent in years, right? It's going to be fascinating. Northwestern, and I kind of think this is going to work in his favor, Northwestern is going to make him become a little bit more creative than he's been in a long time, if he's successful.
I don't know. So this is a Chip Kelly recruiting dig. I don't know that he had all that much talent at UCLA. He had some really good players. You know, Zach Charbonnet was great in that offense, but he didn't recruit to the level of, say, like Jim Mora when he was at UCLA. And so I don't know that UCLA under Chip Kelly and Northwestern now are going to be all that different in terms of talent. I think so. But I will tell you, this feels like Chip Kelly's dream job, because Chip Kelly loves smart players. Like Chip Kelly, I think if you ask Chip Kelly like what he would love to do if money didn't matter, if nothing mattered, like he'd want to be Harvard's coach. And so he loves smart players. He loves just dealing with ball and not dealing with the other BS that you have to deal with as a head coach. And so this allows him to do that. Like in this era of college football, you're an on-field assistant, but you don't have to recruit if you don't want to. So they can just have Chip Kelly be a closer for offensive players, or like portal guys come in and the quarterback comes in and Kelly's like, here's how we'd use in the offense. That's all he has to deal with. And he gets smart players. I think he's going to love this job. I really do.
I think he's going to love it, Andy, but I don't know if I love it necessarily, because I'm trying to reshape the paradigm of success and seeing what kind of moves in what areas make successful programs in this era. This is a Northwestern program where they took a ridiculous amount of money and they built a practice facility, and they took a ridiculous amount of money and they're building a new stadium. And now we're talking about this legacy name that they're hiring as an offensive mind. Do you know what I'm not hearing about with Northwestern? And Ross, you can tell me if I'm wrong. Not hearing about a big fat check for NIL, because last time I checked, this is still Jimmy's and Joe's, right? Yeah. You know, every coach that we've talked to.
Portal's not open yet, bro.
Well, prove me wrong, because I hear about spending like you're a drunk sailor all the time when it comes to Northwestern in a very 2006 type of way. Mm-hmm. We got a genius offensive mind. We're building a really pretty glass practice facility, and now we have a new stadium. That's awesome. Who's going to carry the football?
Yeah. No, you don't hear a lot about them outspending people in the NIL world like we hear mm-hmm. about, say, another private school from another league in Nashville there, Godfrey.
Hey.
That seems to be doling out and competing with other big brands when it comes to paying players in the player compensation. You don't hear about that as much at Northwestern. You're right.
Yep. And I think for the good of the Big Ten, we've talked about this on the show several times. I actually just had lunch with some people from Illinois. They're here in town for the Music City Bowl. This is the middle class of the Big Ten, right? Mm. It's awesome that Chip Kelly's in there. It's going to be creative. I have no doubt that something amazing is going to be dialed up. Personnel is going to elevate this league and nothing else.
It is. And I wrote a column when they announced the last gift for the stadium. I don't even know what job I was at. I may have been I don't know if it was at SI or at the Athletic. And I was like, guys, the only way to get a better stadium is put better players in it. You can have the prettiest stadium in the world, but if you don't put good players in it, nobody cares. And if you do put good players in it, you could mm-hmm. play in an open field and people would throw money at you. So that's really how it works. So, but I am going to withhold judgment. You guys, you know, you seem to be down on this whole thing. You think they've spent all their money. The Ryan family probably has some more money stashed away somewhere, but the portal hasn't opened yet. We don't know. Look, everybody's tampering right now. We don't know who they're tampering with.
Yeah.
I suspect.
How dare you?
They may get some good players this portal cycle. I will say, I like David Braun a lot. He has been really impressive based on what we've seen so far, because the situation he inherited was really tough. They were terrible coming out of the year that he joined this, you know, he joins the team as the defensive coordinator in January. They're coming off a terrible season. They fire Fitzgerald right before the season starts. Braun takes over, coaches them very, very well. And this year, they were such a tough out. They end up going 7-6. You get a little bit better roster with him coaching the defense, with Chip Kelly coaching the offense. That is a team that can compete in the top third of the Big Ten. You've got to get better players, but you don't have to get much better. Like, you don't have to suddenly become Ohio State. You can do this by being better than Wisconsin, by being better than Michigan State, you can do this.
Andy, that's how they built it under Fitz. I mean, was a mm-hmm. very weak Big Ten West, taking advantage of a down Illinois, a hapless Nebraska. Like, I don't have to go through the entire division, you guys remember. No, I like Braun a lot. I think if I had to pick the best interim hire in the last 5 years, he's probably number two behind Harrell at East Carolina. But I think he's great. I just still think it comes down to a personnel issue in terms of taking that next, like getting out of the 6-7, 7-6. Oh God, I just did it again. the 5-6 win is quagmire. Sorry, I have kids. I still think personnel-wise, you got to do something else if you're talking about an 8 or 9 win team.
Well, and y'all know this, like Braun entering this season, there was pretty much an expectation that he wasn't going to be there next year, like just around the industry, right? Everybody expected that job to change. They expected them to go 4-8 or something, and that job to change. And what he's done there has been, it's been pretty remarkable. And you would think that maybe they just got a lot better with this Chip hire. We'll see.
Here's their 2026 Big Ten schedule. We don't know dates or anything yet, but they play Illinois, Indiana, USC, Wisconsin at home. On the road, they play Maryland, Michigan, Nebraska, Purdue, Washington. So, like, it's Illinois, it's Wisconsin, it's Washington, it's Nebraska. Like, what do you do in those games? Because those are your swing games. Those are the teams that you have to be better than. You're probably not going to be better than Indiana. USC will be interesting because their schedule's brutal next year. So it really will depend on where Northwestern falls in the schedule. But it's doable. It's not easy, but it's doable. You can have a good You can have a good team with a schedule like that.
Hey, and to sort of further your enthusiasm, this is what I tell every have not or structurally disadvantaged program in the power is you have to zag. You have to do something different. This is why I preach the gospel, the option. Chip Kelly's not that far off. You know, philosophically, yeah. I think their scheme will do something to close the gap in those games against much more talented teams. But yeah, yep. I think personnel will win those games that you sort of have to stay at that 7-8 win level.
Chip will create an offense that works with the players he has. That's what he's done historically. You know, everybody thinks it's just the blur offense for Morgan. It's absolutely not. The offense he was running at UCLA was completely different. What he ran with the Philadelphia Eagles was completely different. He adapts to whatever he needs to adapt to. Though
definitely
it is, but in Godfrey, I think you appreciate this too. The one constant is they will run between the tackles when they're absolutely working. They are great between the tackles. So
yeah, he'll keep on running.
I'm excited to see this.
He's not scared.
He's arguably the most creative run game mind outside of the option tree that we've had in 30 years.
Yeah. One thing too, he should know as good as anybody, the sort of the schemes and the talent and the players in the Big Ten, right? I mean, he studied it all at Ohio State, and before that, UCLA for, what, a year, maybe two? Or maybe just a year. He was at UCLA in the Big Ten, and then a year at Ohio State. So he should know everybody, even though the coaches turn over and obviously the players turn over more than ever. He should know sort of the talent and the profile of a lot of these schools.
Yeah, it's a lot of familiarity in the Big Ten. Also, Danton Lynn, the defensive coordinator from USC, going to Penn State. So he's already familiar with the league he's going to be in. So we're going to see a lot of that. Yeah. But, guys, we have to pay something off. Because Godfrey wrote a strongly worded letter last week. And it resulted in something beautiful being dropped on his doorstep. We'll talk about it when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer. And if you recall last week, Stephen Godfrey was a little upset because he did not get a care package from the Pop-Tarts Bowl.
Is this because of all the things I said about the bowls that I don't get a Pop-Tarts care package?
I don't know.
I grew up in suburbia in the 80s. Half of my diet was Pop-Tarts in the early 90s, okay? I want my care package. Does Pop-Tarts bowl have a handle? Because I'm in the middle of blowing them up. I am a lifelong frosted cherry.
I love how he's writing a strongly worded letter right now in the middle of the show.
I am tweeting this live on Yahoo. I am an important influencer. I'm following up.
You're trying to get the care package?
I want my Pop-Tarts. And Pop-Tart better be on my doorstep.
Now, the Pop-Tarts Bowl has been played. It was an excellent game. BYU goes down early, comes back and beats Georgia Tech. They were team sprinkle, I believe. And so the frosted cherry and the cookies and cream Pop-Tarts sacrificed themselves. The protein strawberry Pop-Tart dove to safety.
Some are saying that was a Notre Dame coded response by Team Protein Pop-Tart.
This is what
I saw on the internet. Guys, I was about to say I'll never do this again. That's not true. I'll make an ass out of myself on the show all the time. So before we even get into the amount of stuff the Pop-Tarts Bowl sent me, an individual who shall remain nameless, who I've known for a long time, who works for the Pop-Tarts Bowl, also decided it would be funny on Christmas Eve morning to DoorDash me 26 boxes of Pop-Tarts.
No.
Ross.
Stop.
Ross.
Stop.
Pop-Tarts.
No.
Pop-Tart. I'm not going to do the whole box. I put them back in shopping bags. Okay, so we're going to do a quick unboxing. I got this, which I don't know what's in it, but I have seen on social some of our media brethren.
Ah, yes.
Oh, my. We have, please remove plastic bag. No, that's okay. I'll choke on it. I have stuffed Pop-Tarts.
Oh, yeah, those are the, what do they call it? Wait, what does it say on there? The emotional support Pop-Tarts, I believe, right?
These are emotional support Pop-Tarts. Yes.
All right. The emotional support
Pop-Tarts for me are the ones I can eat.
Yeah.
Oh, God, look at this QZ. Just in time for AFCA, boys. That's a sprinkle quarter zip. Just in time for AFCA.
Holy, oh, my God.
All right. I have it looks like two t-shirts in here. Oh, man. So those of you who watch the show a lot know I was wearing a Metallica shirt last episode.
Yeah, the sports.tv.
This is kind of Metallica inspired, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Very much.
And then we're not done. I have two of whatever this is. This thing is huge.
What is that? You don't know what's inside?
Is it like a Pop-Tarts themed cornhole game? What are we looking at here?
No. I'd say we're looking at about 35 pounds, whatever it is. So,
wow.
Okay. Oh my God. Hang on. It's magnetically sealed.
Wow.
Oh, this is like opening the Ark of the Covenants. Holy crap. Okay. I got to get this on camera.
Wow. Oh, is that the different kinds? Yes. That's what they sent to my house where my wife has gotten into all this.
I have
I'm
two
on the road
of these.
For a week and haven't gotten back. Wow.
I have two of these. So there's protein in here, Ross. There's cookies and cream. Here's your protein.
Yeah.
I think I feel like
and
this
the
is
cherry,
what
right? There's the cherry. Yeah, there's protein.
There's protein.
Yeah. 10 grams in each Pop-Tart, I believe. Not bad.
I would say conservatively, guys, I have about 40 boxes of Pop-Tarts in my house right now.
Man.
So
man, oh man.
The lesson is a very American one. Complain about things on the internet and brands will come through. Okay?
That's right.
So thank you to Pop-Tarts for I will wear this.
I think there's a different lesson.
I have to go
here.
To AFC. Andy, I'm wearing this at AFCA.
No, that's a great quarter zip. That is awesome. Yeah. Like, get that out of the pack. I'm about to say, I want to see more of this quarter
zip. Yeah.
This is sex right here.
Is there a logo? Oh, there's a Pop-Tarts logo.
Oh, God, it's sleeveless.
Yeah. Oh, it's a sleeve. It's a vest. It's like a vest.
I want guns out when you wear that, Godfrey. That's going to be guns out. That's nothing underneath.
Nothing underneath and like unzipped all the way.
I mean, a few trips, just work on my tone before we do that.
Yeah, there you go.
the other lesson here, Godfrey, is not that you complain about things on the internet and brands will come through, although that is a pretty valuable one. It is if you have a bowl game and you'd like your bowl game to matter, or if you're a bowl sponsor and you'd like it to matter, have some fun. We just gave Pop-Tarts an entire segment. The game has already been played, and they didn't pay us a dollar. Who's the sucker
brilliant
here?
Marketing.
Oh, yeah. There
brilliant,
it is.
Brilliant
there
marketing.
It is right there, boys.
Oh, there you go.
It's kinda,
that
you know
great.
What? I kind of feel like a maternity ward nurse, like in Scrubs. Sorry to put this over my other free shirt from Delaware.
Yeah, for those not watching, Godfrey has slipped on his sleeveless quarter zip.
That is nice.
What is it? Confetti.
Oh, that is nice.
Pop-Tart. Sure.
YahooSports.tv if you want to see it.
Look out, ladies.
Amazing.
Here's the deal. In America, if you complain loud enough, to Andy's point, what a revolutionary concept to have fun, to make it weird, which is what college football is, no matter how much college football tries, and all the billionaires and all the helmet dorks, this is supposed to be a weird sport, and it is. So they played a good football game because they had two really good football teams play. It's the only game I watched all four quarters in the bowl system so far, in the non-playoff
the best one
bowls.
That's, the most exciting game that's been played so far.
Probably the best
far.
Game I yet. Think, yeah, probably. Yeah.
The Hawaii Bowl ending was fun, but that was more for avoiding small talk, as that's what we do on Christmas Eve. But the Pop-Tarts Bowl is the template for how to have a fun bowl game. Treat the players well, treat the teams well, put on a good football game, and then also don't be afraid to, y'all, so I worked in live event segment production in pro wrestling. Did you guys watch the whole toaster sacrifice like situation with Satake and all that? It was like a minute longer than it needed to be, but it was so much fun because BYU was sort of like kind of playing along tongue in cheek. They didn't care. You know, they're getting in there with their hands. They're, you know, like Bachmeier was like kind of karate chopping the live cooked Pop-Tart. This is what college football is supposed to be. You can still have bowl games. You just might have to put a little effort into it. And also, you got to make some. God, this is just pure sex. Look at this.
Look at that.
You know what? Great. You can wear this to church. You can wear this to
church. It's great. I hope I have one of those in my box when I get home. I need to ask the wife.
Oh, it's so good.
Ross's guns in that thing. That would be a thing of beauty right there.
No shirt.
Yeah, I know.
No,
I kind of got basketball.
No shirt underneath. Yeah.
Oh, this is good.
In the coaches' convention.
This is good.
No, the Pop-Tarts Bowl has done an incredible job of marketing promotion like we've probably never seen from any bowl game in the history of bowl games. It's been really incredible.
Shout out. I mean, there are some fun bowl games out there. Like our friends at Duke's kind of kicked
the
this
Mayo,
whole ideology
the Mayo
off
bowl.
With the
Mayo.
Yeah,
I was going to say, Duke's Mayo walked so Pop-Tarts could run, I think.
That's
absolutely.
Right. They started it. They kind of started like the silly promotional stuff that really caught on and has been. You know, it has taken
even
off.
When,
it's kind of been copied and replicated by other bowls.
Yeah.
Even when that crew in Charlotte was the Belt Bowl before they were the Duke's Mayo Bowl, they had a lot of fun. Perhaps my favorite Belt Bowl memory was when the Arkansas player shoplifted during his belt shopping spree.
Yes, the tight end.
I don't think they meant for that to happen, but it was hilarious.
Yes.
Brett Bielema wondering about his life choices at that point.
Yeah.
I guess I've become sort of, if I wasn't already, the show idiot. It's kind of like spotting the sucker at the poker table here. But the Trust and Will Holiday Bowl also hit me up last night and wants to know if I would like a hat to wear on the show that says Casket Toss. And of course, I said, absolutely, I do. Absolutely,
I thought they were going to ask if you wanted a free will.
I tell you what we should have done. What they should have done is they had have the three of us broadcast from San Diego, because you got to lean into your advantages. Yeah. And I will take a trip to San Diego this time.
Oh, I will take a trip to
Stephen
San Diego
Godfrey
in the winter
being
as
of,
well. Yes.
I, Stephen Bias, Godfrey, baby. Being of sound mind and body.
God, this thing's awesome. I love this so much. And I have enough
good,
cherry
man.
Pop-Tarts to
looking
make it.
Good.
I can eat a cherry Pop-Tart a day until daylight savings ends in March, which is kind of like an emotional support system for me. Mm-hmm, this is fantastic. Mm-hmm. God bless
Again,
Orlando.
Pop-Tarts played us $0 for this. Zero. So that is your lesson, Bowles and Brands. You can do this. You just have to have a little
just
fun.
Send
you
us
have to
a
get
bunch
a little
of
weird.
Stuff.
And send God
emotional.
Yes.
There's the emotional support pop tarts.
Emotional.
Great.
Oh, this one's been bitten.
I'm
but you know what?
I'm already better about my emotions already. Oh, that
still,
one's like one. Yeah,
it's,
one tenth
it's been
of it's
bitten,
gone.
But it's still happy. That's yeah. called that's God. That's called metatext. That's a
Eat
metatextual
me.
Commentary on the year 2025, folks.
Nice.
Look at this beauty.
Very good.
Godfrey's going to squeeze Perfect. That one while his alma mater plays against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, because it's going to be stressful.
Nah, it's screw that. Go Dogs.
Yeah, I got to get to Media Day, Andy.
I'm jumping media to day Go time. Dogs, man.
All right, Ross has to go to Media Day. Schedule update.
I
got
to talk to these LSU assistant coaches.
So weird.
In Ole Miss polos. LSU assistant coaches yes. wearing Ole Miss polos.
Those colors blend.
Friday, we will have a show. No show Thursday because there are three quarterfinal games. But Friday, we'll have a show wrapping up the quarterfinals. We will then be back on the regular schedule on Sunday, where, oh, by the way, there's going to be a lot of transfer portal talk, because holy crap, the transfer portal opens on Friday, and we should have a lot of news, either people going in, and by that point, people coming out, because I don't know how to tell you this, guys, there's some tampering going on. So everybody tamper friendly,
no.
tamper safe. And we'll talk to you on Friday.